5 weeks down, 5 weeks to go. As the second half of the prep football season begins, district races start heating up. In fact, several district championships could be decided as early as this week, as unbeaten rivals square off for the top spot in their districts. Speaking of unbeatens, 35 teams enter week six with perfect records. Who will remain undefeated, and whose O will go? We'll preview all of this week's big matchups and the top storylines in Louisiana next on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. We are one-third of the way through the high school football season in Louisiana. We're halfway through the regular season, but including the playoffs, we have 10 more weeks to go. Week 6 begins now with a Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Welcome in. I'm Ian Ozan. Happy that you are here with us. Of course, we'll go all across the state. We'll also have a conversation with Lakeshore head coach Brent Indest a little bit later on in the program. But we start in the New Orleans metro area with a look at what happened last week and previewing this week. Coach Lou Valden from the WWL All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup joins us. And Coach, let's start with the news that broke Friday night when we were on the air on WWL. JFK having to forfeit its first three games because of eligibility issues. Last year it was Warren Easton that had the problems. This year, JFK. You've been coaching for a long time. Can you explain to me where some of these schools and some of these coaches have issues in maintaining, well, not maintaining eligibility of their players, but keeping track of that eligibility and putting themselves in this kind of trouble?
Well, it basically, it looks like in the Orleans Parish area, it's got to do with transfer kids. Because, and I'm not sure that's the issue at Kennedy, but when you have in other words, every school in Orleans Parish, the entire parish is their attendance zone. So you get what's called a school of first choice, and you pick that school. Now, if you transfer out of that school to another school in Orleans Parish, you have to sit out a year. And a lot of these students will transfer in and things like that, and transfer schools, and then they'll play. And then they get burned for playing an eligible player.
Which is a shame because these kids feel they're doing the right thing. They have no idea they're ineligible. It all goes back to the athletic directors and the coaches. Are there any safeguards these schools can put in to make sure that they don't miss one of these oversights or don't commit one of these oversights?
Well, there's the LHSAA bylaws. And I think when a kid transfers into your school, you have to tell him, look, you know, before he actually enrolls in the school, you have to say, hey, do you realize if you enroll in our school, you will be ineligible to play for a year? You know, that, and then that schools really have to check to make sure it's a bona fide move, you know, to make sure that a kid, that the kid's parents are telling the truth, basically. That it is a bona fide, that they moved into Orleans Parish and they are transferring from a school outside the parish to a school inside the parish. Another thing could be grades. You know, if a kid didn't make up any failures in summer school and didn't pass enough credits or didn't have the required GPA, he could be ineligible. So there's a lot of things. If a kid doesn't have a physical on file and the LHSAA goes in and checks, he's ineligible. So it's basically, the schools policing themselves to follow the rules.
Taking a look at games that are going on this week, our big game this week will be Covington-Mandeville. We'll be going to the North Shore Friday night, weather permitting. These are two teams that have been hot. They're undefeated coming into week six. What can we expect from this District 6-5A matchup?
Well, we can expect it's going to be the Shepherd Show. And it's going to be the Lions trying to stop the Shepherd Show. So that's basically what it's going to be. It's going to be, can they slow this cat down? Because they're just going to give it to Bart. They're just going to feed Shepherd, let him do his thing. And the best way to do that with Covington is to keep Shepherd off the field. Even though he plays, but well, you can't keep him off the field. He plays both ways. But keep the ball out of his hand by controlling the time of possession when Covington has the football.
Nate Shepherd, the running back that you're referring to, he's got several offers. Colorado's looking at him. He was just named the All-State Sugar Bowl Athlete of the Month. The Times-Picayune pushing that out just a couple of hours ago. 4-0 record this year. The senior with 24 touchdowns, 1,100 yards, 1,098 to be precise. And you mentioned the playing defense as well. Broke up two passes. He's a Duke commit right now and is just lighting up the stat book. A very good chance that he'll be in the running for Mr. Football along with several other players this year.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Alan kind of mentioned on the radio show that he's on pace maybe to break the touchdown, single-season touchdown record in the state of Louisiana.
Several other games in the area that we're looking at this week, John Curtis against Holy Cross, Jesuit against St. Aug. St. Aug last week falling to Edna Carr. Did we learn anything about St. Aug in their loss this past weekend?
Well, we learned they're not as good as Carr. That's one thing. But I think, you know, right now St. Aug's 0-2 in the district. And Carr's 2-0, and everyone else is 1-1. So I guess we'll find out, you know, when they play Jesuit. Jesuit's coming off a loss to Holy Cross. So that'll be a test. If St. Aug loses to Jesuit, that means it's going to be one of those years. But an interesting game, Holy Cross and Curtis. Last year, Holy Cross beat Curtis on a Hail Mary, the last play of the game. So I think Curtis is going to want a little revenge on that action right there.
Brother Martin gets Edna Carr this week, lest we forget about them. As we mentioned, Edna Carr with that big win over St. Aug. Brother Martin coming in trying to rebound from a loss last weekend. Archbishop Shaw, we didn't get a chance to see them last week because of the rain. They get St. James this week. That one on the road for the Shaw Eagles. What do they need to do to keep their role going?
Let the big dog eat. Give it to Jasper Parker and let him do his thing. You know, Shaw's mostly a running team, but they have one really good receiver. So what happens, the quarterback can run, Jasper Parker can run, and then they'll run the ball, and then they go play action, hit you with the home run. So, you know, just do what they've been doing the last couple games offensively. Defensively, they've gotten much better than Rummel. They got to then they played against Rummel. So they got to continue to stop the run. They couldn't do that against Rummel. A couple of other games, Riverside and St. Martin. We thought these two teams would be undefeated going into each other. Both of them lost last week, but that's still going to be a super football game. And Terrebonne, who had a big win over Destrehan, is playing St. Charles Catholic. So that ought to be a really good football game as well.
Both of them will be. That Riverside game against St. Martin's intriguing because Riverside, defending state champion, they lost to the team they beat in the semifinals last year, Vermilion Catholic, in a game that was never really close. St. Martin's, Harlan Berry and company, looking to get back on a good foot after falling to Pope John Paul last week. He is Coach Lou Valden. I almost said the head coach of the WWL All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup, but I guess in some respects, you are former state champion head coach and now with us every Friday night on the Big 870. Coach Lou Valden, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you Friday night, my friend.
Yeah, head to the frozen north, the North Shore, to Skipperland and see a really good football game.
Yes, indeedy. We'll see you there. From the New Orleans area, we move on to the Shreveport region. Tim Fletcher from KWKH, 1130 The Tiger, joining us. Tim, here in the New Orleans area, Covington and Mandeville are meeting with 5-0 records. Somebody's O has got to go. Same thing in the Shreveport area. Airline and Parkway, both 5-0 coming into this week's District 1-5A matchup. And for these two, this is not only a match of unbeatens, but a big rivalry game.
It's going to be a blast. How you doing, Ian? Last week, Parkway and Bird met in a battle of unbeatens, and Parkway took care of business. And real quick story on that, and this is just fascinating because I doubt seriously if you guys have heard too much about this, but Parkway, starting quarterback Caleb Williams, the younger brother of LSU star basketball player Michaela Williams, he got hurt. And Parkway had seven starters suspended, and obviously that included their quarterback depth, because they went into the Bird game with no quarterback. So they had to pull out a young man literally out of the stands, and Gavin Farrington. He was a freshman quarterback, hadn't played football since then. He's a senior. He's a lacrosse player. He's going to play lacrosse at Centenary College in town. He's big into lacrosse. But he was called out of the student section, practiced Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then against Bird in a battle of unbeatens, went 12 for 13 for 141 yards, two touchdowns. Parkway also got 200 yards from big C.J. Dudley and Kamaro Mayo, another stud, 92 yards, as well as 16 carries for 89 yards to beat Bird. But they got beat, or they used a quarterback who had not played football since his freshman year, and he's a senior. So Parkway will now go into this week's game as an unbeaten, and whether or not Caleb Williams comes back now, it looks very kind of iffy, so it could be Gavin Farrington. And Ian, when you're taking on Airline, get ready. Have you heard about last week's game with Airline and Captain Shreve?
No. I saw the final score, but I didn't hear the details. Say that score one more time.
69-68. Shreve went for two and the win with about 15 seconds to play and did not convert. Airline remains unbeaten. Here are some of the numbers from that game. DJ Allen, 16 carries, 115 yards, two touchdowns. Micah Johnson, 10 catches, 79 yards, and a touchdown. Kenny Darby, who is a stud, 6 catches, 154 yards, four touchdowns. Jarvis Davis, 15 catches, 271 yards, two touchdowns. And Ben Taylor, a Northwestern State commit, 38 for 53, 573 yards, seven touchdowns, no interceptions, and he also had 5 carries for 52 yards.
Wow.
It's insane. And so Parkway is going to have to try to figure out a way to slow that down. Parkway is massive along the offensive and defensive lines. They are going to have to get after Ben Taylor. They're going to have to make sure he doesn't have as much time to throw as he's been having. They've got to figure out something. They've got Kamaro Mayo in the secondary, who is, like I mentioned earlier, is a superb athlete. Would not be shocked at all, and this is just me speculating, wouldn't be surprised at all if Parkway puts a couple of their other stud athletes that are offense only, if they may find some room for them on defense this week, because it's all hands on deck. And like you mentioned, rivalry game, it's Sobo versus Nobo, South Bossier versus North Bossier. It's going to be absolutely electric. I don't know. I said it last week. I said I've never heard of a scorekeeper having to call in for a game or go on injury reserve because of carpal tunnel, but I think that might be the case this time around as well.
And if you look at the scores from all five of the games that Airlines played and all five of the games Parkway has played, you learn quickly. These are offenses that can score. Airline has scored no less than 47 points in a game this year. Parkway, no less than 40. But you look at the defenses, and here's the difference. Airline has allowed 28 or more points per game in every game. Of course, 68 points allowed this past week. Parkway, though, the fewest they've allowed, 6, the most they've allowed, 35, and that was this past week against Bird. Before that, they were giving up between 6 and 12 points a game. So is this a case where Parkway's defense may be able to hold down Airline, or is Airline's offense just that good?
I'm telling you right now, Ian, the Parkway offensive and defensive line are legit. They are a legit 5A. We could build a powerhouse behind these guys on offense and defense. I am very excited to see what wins this battle. Is it the size and athleticism of those offensive and defensive lines, or is it the speed, precision, and athletic ability of that Airline offense that's going to come out on top? Both coaches are outstanding. Coy Brotherton's been at Parkway for a while now, really gets his guys to play their best. And Justin Scoggin is from the David Feaster coaching tree. And if anyone remembers David Feaster, he's been around for a lot of places and stuff. And, of course, he took Parkway to the state championship as a head coach when Brandon Harris was his quarterback. And then got Glenbrook Academy off to a great start in LHSAA play. And now Justin Scoggin, who was with Feaster at Leesville, is a disciple of Feaster, and it is that type of offense. They find the weakness in the secondary and attack it. And so Airline going up against Parkway, it'll be interesting because there's some Parkway history that is the reason for Airline's success.
Looking at the rest of District 1-5A, Huntington get C.E. Burt this week. Huntington last week beating Evangel. Burt, as we mentioned, falling to Parkway. So this is a battle to stay tied for second place. Speaking of Evangel, we thought that they would have a better season than what they've had so far. They're 1-4 overall, 1-3 in district. Is it time to hit the panic button for Evangel?
Not at all. They're so young and so good. Peyton Houston had another big game. They lose to Huntington 28-27. Missed an extra point, you know, and they're going to go to overtime against Huntington. They are fine. Peyton pops Houston, who just got his LSU offer, you know, class of 2027 quarterback. LSU offered four quarterbacks the other day, and Pops is one of them. And he's going to be fine. He's got some young targets. They're young. This is not the year for Evangel to make a run to the state title, but do not sleep on Evangel in 2025 and 26. They are going to be absolutely loaded. Now, as far as Huntington is concerned, this is an interesting story. They've beaten Evangel, by the way, three out of the last 4 years. So this was not new for Huntington to pick up a win over Evangel. But taking on a Bird squad, Bird in that loss last week to Parkway, Christian Maxey, touched the ball eight times, ran for 294 yards on those eight carries. I grew up in Arkansas, so my public education is not exactly at the top, but I can tell you this much. That seems to be about 30-something yards per carry. That's not too shabby. But they faced the rock, paper, scissors offense of Huntington. And I don't know if I've shared this story with you or not, Ian, but Niles Hullaby, Cameron Davis, and Landon Gibbs, the running backs and quarterback for Huntington. Hullaby and Davis are the running backs, and they do rock, paper, scissors on the sideline to determine who gets to go into the game first. And it kind of fits because Cameron Davis can play quarterback. He can do a lot of things. He can play wide receiver, so he covers a lot of things. So he's the paper of this thing. Niles Hullaby is a beast. He is the rock, and Landon Gibbs, the quarterback, well, he's the state high jump champion. He cleared 6 feet eight in the outdoor track meet this past year. And so, of course, back in my day, to high jump, you would use the scissor kick. So he's the scissors of rock, paper, and scissors. Last week in the win over Evangel, Gibbs, the quarterback, 129 yards passing, two touchdowns, 88 yards on the ground. Hullaby, the rock, 15 carries, 154 yards and a touchdown. Davis, the paper, 17 carries, 147 yards as well. They have got a wave of people they throw at you. And so Bird's defense is going to be tested, but I'm telling you right now, the story with Bird, always, if their option doesn't put the ball on the ground, they typically win the game. Three, I think, fumbles against Huntington last week. All three were very bad miscues at very bad times. They didn't complete. I don't believe they completed or threw a single pass in the game. If they keep the ball off the turf, I think Bird can upset a Huntington. If the ball goes on the turf and Huntington gets that extra possession or two extra possessions, Huntington's going to win this game. Another outstanding game. That's on a Friday. We're on fall break in both Bossier and Caddo Parishes up here. So the Parkway Airline game is Thursday, Bird Huntington Friday.
So two good games to watch, and you don't have to miss one. You can hit one night and go to the other on the other night. Minden North DeSoto.
Absolutely.
Class 1-4A, Minden North DeSoto. Minden undefeated, 5-0. North DeSoto 3-2, but don't let that record fool you. North DeSoto, should they win here, it would not be an upset.
No, not at all. North DeSoto, of course, has been in the semifinals last year in non-select Division II. They were in the state championship the year before that, non-select Division II. Dennis Dunn, who knows a thing or two about winning state championships as the Evangel head coach during the late 90s with the Brock Berlin and John David Booties and all that good stuff. So he certainly knows his way around navigating through this. They've got one of the top quarterbacks in the state in Luke Delafield. They're still missing Cole Corey. There's all-state wide receiver who suffered a PCL injury 3 weeks ago. The prognosis for him to come back before the playoffs is getting better, it feels like. And so there is hope. And so they're kind of rallying around that. Like, hey, if we can just get to the tournament in a decent seed, get a home game, guys, we can make another run because we are unstoppable when we have Cole Corey. So they're trying to get there with that. They've got a kid in Kenny Thomas who's a really good running back who's been running for about 175 to 200 yards per game over these last three games, filling the void that way. But they're taking on a Minden squad. We do a Player of the Week thing every week. We have a local law firm here, Morrison DeWitt Injury Lawyers, who sponsors our Player of the Week. And we get the coaches to nominate folks. I go through the stats for everybody to pick out some other nominations. We can't get a nomination for Minden because they're all the same. They have three or four guys that run for 45 to 60 yards. They have, you know, a quarterback that will throw for 110. They've got seven or eight defensive players that will get nine tackles. No one stands out And Spencer Hurd, the head coach, who won a state championship as a player at Mansfield back in the day, he loves this. He goes, I love the fact that we don't have just one guy that we're counting on, that it is literally a team effort defensively and offensively. So there's not a standout whatsoever, but they are going to have their hands full trying to solve Luke Delafield. This game is in Stonewall, too, I believe. And so they get crazy down in Stonewall, man. They go all out, fireworks, train whistles, you name it. They are all in on this, and this is an enormous game. Both teams are 2-0 in district play. The winner of this game gets a leg up over everybody else because North DeSoto's already got a win over Northwood. Minden, of course, trying to stay unscathed, and a win over North DeSoto gives them that leg up. And for North DeSoto, the power points that come with a win over a 5-0 team can go a long way. So a big game in 1-4A. And also want to mention Calvary has to take on Homer this week. One of the bigger tests for Calvary in District 1-2A. Homer's record 1-4 overall, 0-1 in league play. But they are really good, really young. They've been in the state semifinals and state championship for the last 3 years. Of course, they're coached by a Homer alum in Richie Casey, who won the state championship his first year there. They're going to give Calvary a little bit more of a test than Calvary's accustomed to, but Calvary needs that. And there's a reason why Calvary scheduled Huntington for their last non-district game in Week 9, because Calvary is loading up for another run at a state championship. So it'll be kind of fun to see Abram Wardell, another All-State quarterback, and James Simon, the Texas commit at running back. They're going to get tested by Homer, but I think it's a test that Calvary will be able to pass.
And don't let that 1-4 record fool you. Homer not shying away from competition this year. Lost to Houghton 48-46. No. Lost to Minden 39-20. Lost to Hainesville 27-12. Their last loss to Union Parish. That's the biggest blowout of those losses, 49-14. Their one win coming against Northwestern. So Homer certainly going to be a bigger test than what that record would indicate. Calvary Baptist, they can't fall into the trap here.
No, they can't, and it's pretty interesting up here for some of our small schools, Ian, like Logansport's done this for about 5 or 6 years, where they will schedule way out of their class early on, and it's to prove to their kids that, hey, well, even if it's only if we compete with these guys for a half or if we compete with these guys for the full game but lose, we're not going to face anything tougher than that once we get to the playoffs because we're a 1A school or we're a 2A school in Homer's instance, Logansport, a 1A school. And I think that's really smart. If you've got the personnel and the size, as far as your roster size, to handle a 4A and 5A opponent like Homer and Logansport have done, you know, some of our schools up here, small schools, have 20 kids on the roster. Logansport's got 70 kids, you know, 60 kids. Homer's got 45 kids on the roster. They can handle playing against these bigger squads. They wear out in the fourth quarter because they got kids going both ways. And so that wears them down. But the test is for their kids. Hey, we were able to go toe to toe with Houghton. We were able to go toe to toe with these guys. We're taking on a Calvary squad whose roster size is the same as ours, guys. So let's go. And so it's an interesting philosophy, and it's worked for Homer and Logansport in the past. We'll see if it works for Homer on Friday night.
He is Tim Fletcher from KWKH 1130 The Tiger, joining us on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Tim, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week, my friend.
Sounds good, Ian.
And we'll pause for a quick break. When we come back, we'll check in with Robin Fambro, see what's going on in the Baton Rouge region. We'll also hear from Gene Ponte and get the latest from Monroe after this on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. We're back on the Week 6 edition of the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. We now go to the Baton Rouge metro area. Robin Fambro from The Advocate joining us. And Robin, this is a week where if you let the records fool you, you'd think some of these matches would be big mismatches. That's not necessarily the case, though. And we take 4-5A, for example. Central this week is going to play Woodlawn. Central 5-0, Woodlawn is 2-3. Catholic is getting a 2-3 Liberty squad. Catholic 3-1 on the season. Zachary also 3-1. They're going to be playing Scotlandville, who's 2-3. But these games may be more evenly match up than what the paper would show.
Yeah, you know, I think that's possible in these cases, most certainly. A lot for these teams that are the 2-3 teams, they're going to have to get out early. I don't think any of them can afford to give up a lead early, like give up a couple of early touchdowns and get behind the eight ball. I think they need to come out ready to go and ready to kind of maybe not so much impose their will, but – which is hard to do against teams that are that good, but, you know, just push back and say, hey, we're here. You know, maybe you score first, maybe we set the tone. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they evolve. Gosh, this is the fifth home game in a row for Central, which is kind of interesting. That's very rare.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how they manage that.
Probably how the contracts got you know, shook out is the only thing I can figure. The you know, Liberty is going to be interesting in that with the style they play, very limited passing. You run the ball, you don't waste a lot of time with it. You don't punt, you don't do a lot of things, and when they do use the kicking game, they use it directionally. Like, for they've gotten a couple of touchdowns this year off of teams by on kickoffs, kicking it down and either forcing a fumble or forcing a team so deep in their own territory that they have to punt. So, you know, that this is going to be definitely the biggest test to date for them, but that was an impressive win they had over Bogalusa last week. They've had a couple of other showings that have been good, so that'll be fun. Scotlandville has a chance to kind of prove where they are in the game with Zachary. You know, they've got one of the state's top prospects in Frizzell Shepherd, a wide receiver who's committed to Mississippi State. And the key is finding ways to get him the ball. Now, fortunately, he's not the only weapon they have, but they also have a young quarterback who's, you know, still getting used to some of the rigors of varsity play. Hopefully by now they've settled in. You know, look for them to possibly, you know, maybe kind of put in a little bit of a primer saying, hey, you know, we may wind up being a factor in this district race at some point, you know, whether it's this week or whether it's down the road. And the same thing is true in 5-5A, I think. To me, one game that I point to is Walker at Santa Maul. Santa Maul, of course, picked up a forfeit win from JF Kennedy, from last week. They were one of four teams that did that. But they played Dutchtown to the wire. And, you know, they actually led the whole way. Dutchtown needed a late field goal to win it. And Dutchtown and Walker were considered to be the two preseason favorites. So Walker's one loss is to Central. I think that's going to be really intriguing to see how that one plays out, because that's kind of one, other than Walker playing Dutchtown, you kind of look at that as being a key. Let's see. But that's going to be an interesting one in that district for sure. The other game in that district is actually a Thursday game, Live Oak at Denham Springs.
I want to go to a rivalry game that's on the docket this week, and that's Madison Prep taking on Southern Lab.
The rivalry is still relatively new, and but they know each other very well. A lot of those kids played together growing up. Madison Prep played an extremely tough schedule. If I'm not mistaken, it was 3 5A teams to open the season. And, you know, they are well prepared. Southern Lab is coming off a loss to 5A Denham Springs, which was intriguing. But I think they, even though they lost, they may have gotten some of the things they needed to know about physicality. And you know, the thing that Coach Asbury told me was he thought playing a team like Denham Springs was closer to preparation for, say, somebody like Ouachita Christian down the line. But this week, you know, these teams are going to go at it. They're going to have they like playing each other, it definitely, I think Southern Lab comes out with something to prove. It's their home game, and let's see. Well, you got two in a row for Madison Prep, so they're coming off a win over Parkview, and they scored I think 53 points. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Jumping to 4A, Plaquemine this week, they get McKinley, rather. St. Michael the Archangel this week gets West Feliciana. Two matchups there that'll be relatively intriguing in Class 4A, 6-4A, that district there. Also want to get to Dunham for a moment. They're 5-0. They get Capital this week. The Capital's 1-4. Dunham looks like this team is on the road to a state championship. That's just how good they've been. I've had the chance to see them a couple of times this year. What's it going to take for a team to stop Dunham?
They're going to have to find ways defensively to slow them down and or control the ball offensively. I think you need to control the ball offensively. That's what makes their pending matchup with Episcopal down the line so intriguing is, you know, Episcopal is that kind of grinded team. So I think that's really what it takes. You try to keep the offense off the field, and you just don't make mistakes on your end when you're on offense. You play steady, you take chunks of yardage, and you hold on to the ball. I mean, if you don't have the ball, usually it's difficult to score.
Meanwhile, Episcopal gets Baker this week. Both of these teams are 4-1.
Right. And Baker's coming off a really tough loss to Dunham. They'll need to regroup. I'm sure that was one of those, you know, lesson games that you get. It was kind of a jump up, competitively speaking, from the fabulous start that they had. But sometimes the level of play has to ramp up depending on your opponent. And they're going to go, they have another comparable challenge this week. So it's going to be interesting to see how both Baker responds and also how Episcopal does. Episcopal's coming off if Ascension Catholic doesn't play great games against these two teams, they're not trying. Because every year, this is the third year in a row they played back-to-back, Dunham and Episcopal, and I kind of joke about them trying to get the unofficial 2A district title. But both games were fabulous, and they were a good gauge for Episcopal and where they need to be. And that'll be kind of interesting just to see how that unfolds on that front.
We've been bouncing around classifications. Any games that we may have missed that you'll be paying attention to this week?
Well, yeah, the Thursday night game, actually, it's not a team that people are talking about much because they don't know them, but North Iberville in 1A, District 8 1A, is 5-0. And this is a school that played sub-varsity the last 2 years. They are back in varsity competition for the first time in 15 years, and their first varsity game is going to be against St. John at Plaquemine High Thursday night. And they have a squad that's relatively young with a lot of talent. A lot of those guys are kind of known on what you call the 7-on-7 circuit. And, we don't know how they're going to match up, say, with Ascension Catholic or in any of these other teams because, again, they haven't been in this mix before. But this is kind of where it starts for them.
And we should also note Archbishop Shaw, they're taking on St. James this week. That game in St. James, correct?
Yes. And that shapes up to be a fabulous game. I think both of those teams will dig in and they want to see what the other gets from the competition. You know, St. James wants to see some of the discipline and some of the things that some of the offensive and defensive strategies that Shaw employs. And by the same token, Shaw wants to see what St. James has athletically and then perhaps in some of the things that they do, because St. James is emerging as very good. They're one of those teams that's kind of growing as they go because they have so many young starters, including a freshman quarterback. But, they have a receiver who's back from last year, Jaquias Villanueva, who's very, very good, and he's dynamic in the return game. So that's kind of a great one to watch.
She is Robin Fambro with The Advocate joining us to give us an update on the Baton Rouge area. Robin, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty, thank you.
From the Baton Rouge area, we move on now to Northeast Louisiana and Monroe. Gene Ponte from the K104 Downs Law Scoreboard Show joining us. And we'll start with Alexandria-West Monroe district matchup. Two teams that have a lot of weapons. Alexandria has JT Lindsay, LSU commit. What does West Monroe need to do to contain him, and what do they need to do to pull off the upset here?
Well, and you're right. It would be in that set, especially since they're playing down in the Senla. That kid's a good football player. I think he's 6'1", 190. What I think has been impressive so far for the Trojans is just the way they've got that balance with Coach Bachman. Sure, he's the guy toting the rock, but they've got a young sophomore quarterback. I think his name's Carson Sellers, and another one who's a senior, Max Gassett. Those guys are going to split the time, although Sellers will probably see the majority of it. They're doing a nice job of kind of mixing it up, Ian. And if there's one thing, too, that I think West Monroe is doing well is that they're playing very, very good defense. You know, they shut out Scotlandville this past Friday 50-0 in a game that I'm not real sure tells anybody how good or bad the Rebels are. Because Scotlandville struggled. But my friends down at Alexandria said the same thing. They played Manning, and it is not the same Manning team that we know in years past, and that game was ugly too.
Another game in that district, another big one, is going to be Ruston taking on Ouachita Parish. Ruston 5-0, Ouachita is 4-1. This is set to be another barn burner.
Oh, Ian, there's no question about it. I mean, Ruston, every week they continue to add on the wow factor. They just beat the number one team in Texas 4A football, Stevensville, 63-17 over in Longview on Saturday. The Jordan Hayes kid had a couple more scores. Aiden Anding, the LSU guy, or commit, had an 86-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. The 63 points is the most Ruston has scored in over a decade. While on the other side of that coin, Ouachita, they played Franklin Parish in what we think was the best game of the week. It was also our game of the week on K104. But, man, Franklin Parish has a quarterback, Dez Ellis, who just, man, showed up and showed out. 240-something yards, 4 touchdowns, ran for another 158. But at the end of the day, it was Ouachita. They had 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns. And then MJ Dade and Montrell Connor both ran for over 100 yards. It was a 51-47 football game. But, man, you're right. Ouachita and Ruston should be a lot of fun. And I think it's at Ouachita, if I'm mistaken.
That's correct, yes. It is at Ouachita Parish. So for Ruston, this is a team that they've traveled to Texas and here, there, and yonder. Making a trip to West Ouachita shouldn't bother them at all.
Oh, yeah, no, they're probably looking forward to that 40-minute drive because that's about all it is, maybe 45 at best. So, yeah, this is nothing for the Bearcats. And, look, man, they're just getting it done. I mean, that's these last few weeks are still undefeated. They're putting up some big-time numbers.
I need to correct myself, making that drive to Ouachita Parish. West Ouachita in District 2 4A, they're going to be taking on a Franklin Parish squad that's 4-1. So Ouachita, West Ouachita, that is, trying to remain undefeated against another team that's been awfully good this year.
Yeah, I just told you about how impressive Franklin Parish looked against Ouachita playing up in class. But, you know, West Ouachita is playing good football too. They're undefeated. They won big over Caldwell 55-13 in a game that was a little bit of a mismatch. But their young running back MJ Owens had 160 yards, I think 3 touchdowns in their win. It ought to be a good football game. This will probably be the last real test for Franklin Parish. Coach Adrian Burnett, we were with him Saturday morning, and he feels like this is their biggest challenge of the year, and they got him at home, so it ought to be fun to watch. So
those are the big school matchups that we're looking at. What are some of the other games and some of the smaller classifications that we should be paying attention to?
Well, I think one of the best ones is going to be a little bit further up Highway 15 from Franklin Parish, and that's at Mangum High School. They have Faraday coming into town, and anybody that keeps up with that, and I know you do, heck, you're from that neck of the woods, that they're a good football program, and Mangum, I think, has finally got their canoe in the right water, and they're playing good, too. So that's one that we're going to be watching big-time close come Friday night. All the other ones, I would tell you, are just standard week 6 ball games. I know that every game is important for everybody, but those are probably the top 4 here in Northeast Louisiana.
And those are 4 big games that'll be played in Northeast Louisiana, and we'll be keeping an eye on them Thursday and Friday night. He is Gene Ponte from the K104 Downs Law Scoreboard Show, joining us on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Gene, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week, my friend.
Hard to believe we're in week 6. Thank you, Ian.
Yeah, I know. Playoffs will be here before we know it. And the week 6 edition of the Pelican State Prep Football Preview continues after this. We'll take a pause from our trip around the state and have a conversation with Lakeshore Titan head coach Brennan Dest after this on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. We're back on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview Week 6 edition. We'll pause from our look at games around the state and have a quick conversation with a man who's no stranger to football in Louisiana. He's been a winner everywhere he's gone, a state champion both as a player in high school at Catholic of New Iberia and as a head coach at his alma mater, now the head coach at Lakeshore. Brent Endes joining us. Coach, thank you for spending some time with us.
Oh, glad to be here. Glad to join you. It's been a while.
It certainly has. Last night, I was scrolling through Facebook, and the Louisiana High School football history page does a good job of chronicling high school sports in the state of Louisiana, especially former All-State teams. And I was looking through one of them, and I never knew this about you. You were an All-State quarterback back in the day at Catholic High. I knew you were a state champion, but I didn't realize you were All-State.
Yeah, that's quite a long time ago. I was very fortunate my senior year our head coach, Darcy Delcombe, brought in a very young guy at the time by the name of Mark Schroeder that actually ended up coming back to this area, coached for a long time at Higgins and, I think, you know, kind of all around this area. But Mark came in, and we were back in the shotgun in 1983 when really nobody was doing that other than Roger Staubach. And, you know, we pitched it around a little bit. We had some good receivers, and although we weren't a great team, we had some fun time chunking it around.
I find it funny that you were a quarterback in a shotgun formation, let me not say how many years ago, but nowadays where the spread offense is everywhere in the game of high school football, you're running an old school offense. You're still running the wing T. Why is that? Why are you playing an old school game in where everybody else is running this newfangled pistol or spread or shotgun, these various types of chunk it around football?
Well, it's the same reason that Acadiana still runs a split back veer. It's because, you know, people just, the more people get in the spread, the more that don't know how to defend triple option, you know, wing T. Now, I will say this, we have morphed. Here at Lakeshore, we are in the shotgun. It's a shotgun wing offense, which is, you know, we're throwing it probably we're running it probably 88% of the time. But we have morphed into more of a shotgun look with the same plays. But it just gives you more options in different parts of the game with quarterback runs, boots, and different things like that.
I'm trying to envision how that works, because when you put them on paper, the wing T and the shotgun appear to be two totally different offenses. How are you able to make them work and mesh like that?
Well, you know, it's the same thing that, you know everybody was I'm going to say Malzahn, Urban Meyer, everybody in the gun or whatever they were doing, they were just sitting there and throwing concepts, and then all of a sudden, you know, guys like Malzahn, who was a wing T guy, and guys like Urban Meyer, who love the triple option, they just went into these spread offenses, and they said, well, you know, instead of just sitting back here and running zone and just throwing it to these guys, we're going to go ahead and read a guy and throw off a guy. And so thus invented the zone read, and then came the RPOs. And so it's really no different than that. It's just kind of blending some of these things together.
The wing T, Lakeshore runs it. Church Point, back when John Craig Arsenault was there, ran it. You mentioned the split back veer to Acadiana. Those are just a few of the examples of some of the schools that run old school offenses in this day and age. When you get kids coming in and they expect to run plays they see on TV, either in college games or pro games, how difficult is it to sell them on playing that 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of game?
Well, first of all, we're more about 8 yards in a cloud of dust. And, you know, and secondly, winning takes care of everything. I mean, just to simply answer that question.
So as long as the kids know that you're winning, they'll run whatever offense you tell them to run, even if it means the quarterback may not be passing the ball all that much. If it's more of a run base, they'll go with it if it means getting a state
title. You know,
title.
We got here, and Lakeshore was you know, did a really good job for a number of years, but the team that I inherited had gone 11-11 the previous 2 years, and, you know, throwing it, probably 60% of the time. And, you know, that first year we took over, went 10-3, you know, knocked off Opelousas in the quarters. That sells things pretty quickly.
And to build a tradition like that, you've been all over the map in the state of Louisiana, and you've built winning traditions everywhere you've gone. Or I should say, you've built winning traditions in the schools that may not have had them, and you've maintained winning traditions at the schools that had them. As a coach, what is it like for you to be able to do that, to be able to either build or maintain those traditions that you inherit?
You know, well, first of all, I always say it's, you know, like we tell the kids in life that the most impressive people in the world are those who are dealt a bad hand as children, you know, that maybe were raised in a very rough atmosphere, and fix it and start their own traditions and start their own way of doing things in a positive manner. And I tell them that the worst of humanity are people who were born with a silver spoon in their mouth and turn it into something not very good. It end up just not following in those traditions, not being able to uphold that. Well, I think it's the same with a football program. I think it's the same with a business. And, you know, when I stepped into Catholic High, for instance, who had a really good thing going, but we kept it going, but made it a whole lot better. You know, we turned a second round, third round school into a Superdome type school. I thought that was great. Also, I very proud of, you know, let's say at Crowley and Kaplan, where we went in, myself and my staff, and took over really downtrodden programs that were doing really poorly, and within a year or two, you know, really turned them around. So it's a fun thing to do, and I'll be honest, there's nothing more fulfilling to me than walking into what we did at a Kaplan, Crowley, places like that, and turning around something that was very bad and turning it into something very good.
And it's interesting that with a lot of these schools, Abbeville, they had some down years after you left, and they recently came to resurgence. Crowley has been up and down. But Carrico and Kaplan have been able to maintain that, and they're looking pretty good, or at least over the last few years they have. Now, you got out of coaching when you left Catholic and New Iberia. You'd won a state title. You stepped down. Then you went into radio for a little bit. You were hosting a daily sports show in New Iberia on a station there. What drove you back into coaching? What pulled you back in?
Well, you know, it was a lot of things. I got out for some business opportunities that the timing didn't work out real well because COVID. I got out in December of 19, and COVID reared its ugly head, you know, around the quote-unquote Ides of March of 20. And so that really didn't help with the business opportunities that were kind of laid before me. And so, I got into radio, started doing a few things, and things were going fairly well. And but then, you know, that this Lakeshore thing came up, and honestly, it was something that initially I wasn't really interested in. But I always say that the best thing, the best negotiations you'll ever do is when you really don't want something, and you know, and you talk a few times, and things get a little better with this and that schedule, this and that, and then all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I think this is an opportunity I need to take advantage of.
And now it's a decision that you certainly don't regret making. You're doing well at Lakeshore. You have this team on the cusp of another playoff run this year. What's next for Brennan Destin, the Lakeshore Titans?
Well, we've got Franklinton coming up, which honestly is by far, not even close, the best team that we've played on our schedule. They're extremely explosive. They just don't have any weaknesses, especially at skill positions. Coach Salter Formaggio does a great job. It's kind of a homecoming for us. We played last year, but he was out. He had recently had surgery that week, so we actually couldn't go face-to-face. But, you know, Salt and I worked together in Abbeville 30-something years ago for a year. And so I know Coach Salt real well. And but, you know, we've got those guys. And then we've got, you know, ironically enough, from the Jamboree through week five, we played the entire what I call Slidell 5A district. And we're fortunate enough to beat them all. But I truly believe that that Franklinton would have swept that as well. And I believe that Pearl River would have swept those teams as well. Pearl River also beat Chalmette, who's only a two-loss team. And Chalmette's beating Holy Cross, who just beat Jesuit. I mean, we handled Chalmette pretty well, and Pearl River beat Chalmette last week. So I think the toughest of our schedule is definitely ahead of us. And then we've got a heck of a Hawnville team in week 10. who I'm still wondering why the heck, figuring why the heck I scheduled that. But, we'll just have to deal with it when it comes.
Absolutely. One last thing I want to ask you about. This is the Southeast Wing T Spread and Defensive Clinic. You're a clinician at this Wing T Clinic. What kind of response do you get from some of the other coaches who come here hoping to learn about this formation and looking to implement it with their own teams?
I've always been, very open about what I do. I think when it really took off, after we won that first state title, after we went to the Superdome the first time at Catholic High in 14, lost to Calvary, I started having a lot of folks asking, hey, can we come over and talk, talk Wing T. And I ended up hosting, three or four groups of coaches, from different schools every year. And, and then all of a sudden, you start getting calls from some of these clinic folks that, hey, would you come speak on this and come speak on that? And some people call the Wing T a cult. Maybe it might be. But, we always get together. Wing T coaches always take care of each other. We share film. We share ideas because there's just not a whole lot of us relative to, the spread thing that's going on everywhere. So, it's fun to get to know these people and to work with them. And believe me, I learned as much from them as they learned from me.
Franklinton taking on Lakeshore, I should say Lakeshore taking on Franklinton this week. That game in Franklinton, correct?
Correct. Sure is.
And that's
first game on turf. First game not on turf the entire year. So, that's going to. I don't know how much of a challenge that's going to be. It's completely opposite. Although in South Louisiana, they're catching up a little bit. But, in South Louisiana, you might play on turf two or three times a year, especially in the New Iberia, area. But up here, it seems like everybody's got turf.
In terms of the Wing T, does that make a difference in terms of how your running backs adjust their footing or adjust their cuts?
Only if it's wet. If it's not wet, which it shouldn't be, it looks like we're going to have beautiful weather this week. One of the things that people don't understand, misconceptions, I guess the word I was looking for, is that a wet weather, I think it's way better for a spread team than it is a Wing T team. There's so many moving parts in the Wing T, and there's so many sharp cuts that the backs have to make. I do find that, and I've told people that before, because I'll talk to people about the negatives of the Wing T, and one of them is that on a wet field it is a difficult offense to execute.
It's a difficult offense to execute whether it's in wet conditions or even if it's dry, but still, when run right, one of the best and most beautiful formations that you'll find in terms of watching plays develop.
Any offense that makes the defense cover every inch of grass on the field is a great offense, in my opinion. And I think where the Wing T gets a bad name at times is teams that just refuse to throw the football, and especially teams that refuse to throw the football on run downs. And that's where we make our living, is not only, the first play out of the second half against Salmon, first and 10 on our own 30-yard line, we threw a 70-yard touchdown pass. And if you're not willing or able to do that, it really does make the offense a bit mundane and I think not near as successful.
He is Brent Endes, the head coach of the Lakeshore Titans, taking on Franklinton this Friday night, 7 o'clock kickoff in Franklinton. Coach Endes, we appreciate the time, and whenever this coaching thing comes to an end, love to get you back on the radio.
Absolutely. Enjoy it.
And when we return to the Pelican State Prep Football Preview, we'll take a look at what's going on in the Acadiana area. Kevin Foote from the Acadiana Advocate will join us right after this on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Stay tuned. The Week 6 edition of the Pelican State Prep Football Preview continues. I'm Ian Ozan. Thanks again to Brent Endes for spending a few minutes with us to talk about the Wing T, its success, and everything going on over at Lakeshore. We now move to the Lafayette area, the Acadiana region. Kevin Foote from the Acadiana Advocate joins us. And, Kevin, we talked last week about the coaching change at Lafayette Christian Academy. It didn't work out for them. in their game last week at Central. They lost. They still have only one win on the year. And now for LCA, District is getting closer for them. In fact, District begins this week against a school that's literally in their own backyard, Lafayette Renaissance Charter Academy. This is an interesting matchup, not just because of the geographic location, but because Lafayette Renaissance Charter is run by the same people who last year were running LCA's football team. So what can we expect from this game?
Well, LCA, I thought, actually performed better last week against Central than I was kind of expecting. You know, a lot of times when you get a coaching change like that, an abrupt one, you never know how it's going to work out. I've seen it where the team plays better, and I've seen it where the team plays worse. So, you know, you never really know. They actually played fairly well because Central's a really good club. So, you know, I don't think Lafayette Renaissance is quite ready to, you know, to play at the level of a Lafayette Christian. I would think Lafayette Christian would get their second win. We'll see. Now, you know, I after this year, we'll see what happens. But I would expect in this first year, they're not quite at that level. You know, they, Lafayette Christian has been playing teams like, you know, Central and Rummel and Karen Crow, and Lafayette Renaissance has been playing teams that, you know, on a way on the other side of the spectrum. So I would think they're just so much more tested, and I wouldn't expect it to be like a nail biter or anything.
Let's move up to 4A for a moment. One of the 30-some-odd remaining unbeaten teams in the state of Louisiana is Turlings, and this is a program that I don't think anybody expected to be 5-0 entering the back half of the regular season. What has Turlings been able to do, and how have they been able to get this talent out of their players, some of whom are young and inexperienced? This squad lost a lot of talent last year, but yet it seems as if they've had no drop-off.
Well, I don't, they realized that they didn't have an explosive passing game like they've had at times in recent years with seasoned quarterbacks and dynamic receivers. So what their strength of their team was their huge up front. They have a really good running back in Fields. And so they're just running the ball at a really high level. I mean, they're just, you know, just bulldozing teams. And so, you know, they've struggled at times without Palouses, but they never, they never lost to them. So I didn't really think they would lose to Opelousas. But, you know, it's not so much that what their record is, it's that no one's really come close to them. Like, Sam Houston was supposed to be pretty good, and they just steamrolled them. So, no, they're just doing it with a dynamic rushing attack. And, you know, Coach Saponche and his dad, they've been used to passing the ball. But really, they want to run it. I think a lot of people think they're fancier than they really are. And, you know, they're doing a great job of running the ball.
They'll get another test this week as they take on Rain. They're 3-2. That a District 4-4A matchup. One of the other unbeaten teams in the area is Vermilion Catholic. They're 5-0. They beat Riverside last week, and I think for a lot of people it was an eye-opener. We knew Vermilion Catholic was good, but the fact that they avenged their semifinal loss against Riverside from last year in that game last week, I think, turned some heads. And Jonathan D'Artes finally getting some of the recognition he deserves outside of the Acadiana area.
What he did last week, I don't think I've ever seen in all my years, four decades or so of covering high school football in the area or anywhere. They had 43 rushes as a team for the game. He had 40 of them. He set the school record for yards rushing in a game, for total yards in a game, because he threw for a little over 200 as well, and for the longest run from scrimmage with a 91-yard touchdown run. So it just amazes me how you can absolutely know who's going to run the football and you just can't stop them. In many ways, I think it was the most remarkable performance in the history of Acadiana high school football.
Meanwhile, Ascension Episcopal also unbeaten. They're 5-0 entering this week. They'll play a 1-4 Gatos squad. Another school we've not spoken much about, Ascension Episcopal, the Blue Gators, looking good. Can they sustain this going into the playoffs?
Well, you know, I got a chance to see them in person last week for the first time, and
you know, they have a really good running back in Abshar. They their passing game kind of took some strides last week. They Brandon Mitchell, whose dad Brandon Mitchell played at A&M, and it was a linebacker, huge running back, at Abbeville, and played with the New England Patriots. He's a taller, slender kid, built a little different than his dad. He played wide receiver. They moved to quarterback kind of by necessity, and he's just starting to really figure out the passing game. He can really run. He has speed. You know, last week he ran for about 150 and threw for about 200. So, you know, I think they're pretty good. I don't know that their defense is over the top outstanding, but it played very well. And they're really moving the football. So not this week, but next week they play BC. That should be quite a game.
Westminster Christian also in that district. They're 4-1. We should give them their props as well because they've had a great season so far. They play Vinton this week. They are 3-2. Let's jump back to 4A for a moment. Going back to District 4, 4A. St. Thomas More, 2-3 overall, but they got a district win last week over Westgate. What did you see in that particular game, and is this STM squad closer to getting back to form?
Well, again, they play such a tough schedule early, and they are very much in transition. Their offense is not nearly as explosive as it's been for most of the last decade. But they're still really good on the line of scrimmage. They're still outstanding defensively, and that's going to be good enough to beat just about anybody they're going to play from here on out until they get, you know, past like the second round of the playoffs. So, like, Turlings, we'll see. I mean, you know, they're actually probably a pretty similar team than Turlings right now. So we'll see how that game goes. But I would be surprised if they lost any other games other than Turlings until they get, you know, past the first or second round in the playoffs. But we'll see.
Moving up to 5A, District 3 5A, Southside last week with a 31-14 win over Barb. They get a 4-1 Sam Houston team. Can Southside continue its streak of victories over the Lake Charles area side of the district?
You know, I was very impressed. Now, I wasn't surprised that they lost, but I mean that they beat Barb, but it wasn't real, real competitive. So it was they played very well in that game. And, you know, if they beat Sam Houston, then, you know, it looks like their, you know, their game with Acadiana, I don't know if they're quite ready for that, but it looks like their game for Acadiana might be, you know, for the district title down the road. So, no, they're doing a great job, again, running the football. There's really not a lot of passing in the Acadiana area this year. You know, for years, St. Thomas More was passing at a really high level, and, you know, when Juwan was, he was a runner, but he also made a lot of big passing plays when he was at LCA. We don't have a lot of passing. Most of the best teams in our area are running. You know, Opelousas is a running team, and Cecilia does a little passing. But no, Southside is doing a great job of running the ball. I think they did a good job of keeping their offense the way it was with the coaching change, and it's paying off pretty big so far.
It certainly is. The Acadiana Rec and Rams also seeing success. They're 4-1. They lost their opener to Ruston. They opened district play with two wins over New Iberia and Sulphur. This week, they get Barb on the road in Lake Charles. Can Acadiana make it 5 in a row?
Yeah, I don't. You know, in times in past years, Acadiana would have a game where they fumble 5 or 6 times. They seem to be past all that. I would be surprised if anybody in the district came real close to them. I just think they're too physical in season for the teams, most of the teams that they're going to play from here on out. So I would expect that they would get that win unless they turn it over. I got to tell you, it wasn't that long ago. I guess it's getting to be a little while ago. This was as good a rivalry as there a series as there was. But, you know, since the Storms and Lake Charles, Barb hadn't quite been what they were before. They're not playing the kind of defense that they used to play, but kind of missed those old really good Acadiana Barb, and that series for a while was just outstanding. But no, I don't think anybody's that close to Acadiana this year in that district.
Parish rivalry matchup, Lafayette against Karen Crow. The Bears finally getting a win over New Iberia, their first of the year last week. Lafayette dropped 2 straight. They're now 3-2 on the year. Who you got in this one?
Well, you know, Lafayette lost last week, but they played pretty competitive with Sam Houston. That was a game that was, you know, not decided till the very end. And while Karen Crow got the win over New Iberia, it wasn't as by as many points as I was thinking. So, I don't know, a week or two ago, I'd have said, I don't know about this. I would have thought Karen Crow would have the edge over Lafayette, but I'm pretty impressed with the way Lafayette played last week, even though they lost the game. And I think that one's going to be a lot closer than some people think.
Indeed it will. Speaking of close games, Crowley, Iota, and Acadia Parish matchup. This one maybe for the District 4-3A Championship. Both teams 4-1, 2-0 in district entering this week. Who do you have in this one?
Well, I just think Iota's played a tougher schedule from here on out. And when a team's at home and they've played a tougher schedule, I kind of give them the edge. I think Iota's just played in more of these big games in recent years than Crowley has. Got to give Crowley credit, though, because, you know, the program wasn't looking too good a year or two ago, but it's gotten a lot better. And you know, the coach has done a good job there. And, I got to give Iota credit. They just have more experience in these big games, and they played a tougher schedule.
And lest we forget, Northwest and Church Point also in that district. Northwest is 1-0 in District 3-2 overall. They play Ville Platte this week. Ville Platte winless. Church Point 1-1 in District 3-2 overall. They get a 1-4 Pine Prairie this week. He is Kevin Foote from the Acadiana Advocate, giving us a preview of the Acadiana region. Kevin, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll do it next week, my friend.
All right. Thank you, sir.
From Lafayette, we go to the Bayou area and the River Parishes. Troy LaBeouf joins us to discuss the games in that region. And Troy, last week we expected Riverside and St. Martin's to pull off victories in their respective games. That didn't happen. This week, both of them looking to avoid a two-game losing streak as they play each other at Riverside. So can the Rebels rebound from their loss to Vermilion Catholic, or will we see St. Martin's come back and pull off an upset here after losing to Pope John Paul last week?
Yeah, good to be with you again this weekend. Week six of the football season, the weather's starting to change. And, yeah, we saw both of those teams lose tough games this past week. No shame in who they both lost to. Riverside lost to what is now the number one ranked team in Division Four. If you look at, depending what poll you look at, Central Catholic and Vermilion Catholic are 1-2 in the polls right now. But their quarterback, Jonathan D'Artes from Vermilion Catholic, he is a real deal. Folks, if you haven't had a chance to see him, obviously from the Lafayette area, he takes some hill, but he's a lot smaller. They just snap it to him and he goes. And he's got a lot of speed, and they gave Riverside fits defensively because every time Vermilion needed a play, he made one. And they just outscored Riverside. Riverside put a lot of points on the board, 34, but just wasn't able to get the key stops. And then on the other side, St. Martin's, how about Pope John Paul? Good football team. Not a lot of people are talking about Pope John Paul, but they need to start doing that because they took care of Harlan Berry, a five-star, one of the top recruits in the country for St. Martin's. So you'll see those two teams. It's going to be a huge game this week between these two star power in both backfields with Harlan Berry at St. Martin's and Dedrick Glass. They are a very small, diminutive running back, but very powerful running back. For Riverside, the Rebel defense will certainly be tested this week with the speed of Barry, just like they saw that speed with D'Artes last week when he was able to get outside. I do think the Rebels figure out this a way to get back on the winning track and go to 3-2. It's going to be a big time. I think this one probably decides the district.
You led me to my next question in terms of these two running backs. We know how good both Harlan Berry and Dedrick Lastie are. Which of these two running backs do you think will fare better against the opposing defense? Who do you think, or whose defense do you think is better tooled to stop the opposing running back?
Yeah, that's a great question. Riverside, I mean, I know the coaches got to be scratching their heads and looking at the different run fits defensively that Riverside did not do against Jonathan D'Artes and Vermilion Catholic. There were just some gaping holes. There were some misassignments. I do believe Riverside's going to be challenged defensively this week because if Barry has a chance to get a crease and he gets into the second level, into the secondary, Riverside's got a lot of speed. And, but I just don't know if they got a guy that has 4.2, 4.3 type speed if Barry can get into the second level to catch him. So On the other side, when you're trying to stop a Dedrick Lassie, Riverside's got a big offensive line. He kind of hides behind those guys. Then all of a sudden, like a little water bug, he spouts out of the water. He busts out of there. So I say even. I say what team, what defense can limit the big plays? When you talk about explosive plays, we talk about them being 20 to 25 yards or more. Whatever team gives up the least amount of explosive plays on defense, I think will win the game.
Taking a look at some of our other Week 6 games, Lutcher beating Vanderbilt Catholic 33-0 last week. This week, they get Edie White, or pardon me, they get South Terrebonne this week. They're on the road. Next week is Edie White, Week 7. So you've got two big matchups for Lutcher here. They've been rolling so far this season and an opportunity to keep that roll going through district play.
Yeah, two shutouts in a row for the Bulldogs. The Dingo defense, as they call them, they're playing fantastic, lights out, just suffocating their opponents. They took care of a really good Vandy Catholic team. Zach Jenkins and Trenton Chaney were the offensive standouts, Zach being the quarterback, Chaney being the running back. But their defense has really been good the last 2 weeks, 2 weeks in a row, as I said, with the shutouts. Don't look past South Terrebonne. They're going to give you a fight. Because I know the coaches are telling them that this week, because the huge matchup, like you mentioned, with Edie White in Week 7, we'll talk about that one next week. That one's most likely going to determine who's going to win the district. And district titles do still mean something around to folks. It's just a pride thing, and we know how the power rankings work. But this is a huge PowerPoint game for both teams, you know, with Lutcher and Edie White with their opponent this week. So they need to get past this week. And then we can talk about next week.
Hanville shutting out H.L. Bourgeois last week, 42-0 there. They're 3-0, ranked 7th in D1 non-select in the unofficial power rankings. They get Thibodeau this week.
That could be a tricky game. You know, Greg Trostmeyer does a good job at Thibodeau High. They've been up and down this season, but they have enough offensive firepower and enough on the defensive side to give Hanville problems. I think this is going to be a close game. Hanville beat a very good H.L. Bourgeois team, who was one of our surprise teams, along with West St. John, who's at 3-1 in the season. They beat them 42-0, and they took care of business early. I think Coach Boyne has the Tigers playing right where he needs them to be playing as they head into the end of the season. And don't look now, but they're 7th in the power rankings. They're sitting with a home game, a bye and a home game in the first round.
Meanwhile, Destrehan still continuing to struggle. 30-21 to Terrebonne last week, though they get H.L. Bourgeois. I'd imagine Destrehan gets a good bounce back this week.
Yeah, they really need to play better defensively. You know, they still dealing with some injuries. I know we talked about Jackson Fields not being playing quarterback for him for Destrehan. I'm not sure if they're going to get him back this week or not. Obviously, a little young at the position right now, but their defense, I think. Coaching staff wants the defense to play better, and we know how great of a coach Mark Scott has over there. But Terrebonne took care of him. Celestine, a running back for Terrebonne, is a load. He's got speed, and he ran all night on Destrehan. If you looked at the highlights, that's all they talked about was Celestine, the running back. So they get a nice win. Sitting at number 32 in the power rankings, Destrehan's got a little bit of work to do as we head into week 6 of the regular season. So they got to start stringing some victories together if they want to get back into the playoffs, which where they are every single year fighting for a state championship.
Meanwhile, Terrebonne hosts St. Charles this week. The Comets, they're scrappy, just not able to get over the hump yet. Meanwhile, St. James, who beat St. Charles last week, 15-11, will host Archbishop Shaw this week.
That's a great matchup. I mean, Shaw is fantastic. We know what Hank Turney does. The coach, and I mean, he's just a legend. They have a really good running back in Jasper Parker that everybody in the country would love to have join their college program. But, you know, St. Charles 0-4, they are the best 0-4 team in the state. I will argue that with anybody. They don't have an easy one this week. You mentioned they host Terrebonne with Celestine and those offensive weapons. So something tells me St. Charles will find a way to win this week. It's going to be. They got to keep it low scoring as they have all season long. But that matchup with St. James and Shaw, I mean, this is going to be huge. This is going to be a big-time game. St. James is playing so well defensively. They're going to have to play well again this week. So we'll see. One thing of note to St. Charles, they got a chance that they can win this one. I think they got a chance to take care of business the following 3 weeks, and then that sets up a week 10 showdown with the aforementioned team. We just talked about Shaw, and that one would be for the district championship. And sitting at number 28 in the rankings, if the playoffs were to start today, St. Charles would not be in, and that's something that we never, ever said.
Right, and that's something we never would have expected, even with them jumping up two classifications this year. Donaldsonville, they beat White Castle last week. They get Brule this week. And Ascension Catholic beating Episcopal last week, they're sitting number one in D4 Select right now. Who does Ascension Catholic get this week?
Ascension Catholic will travel to Ascension Christian, a little rival for them on the east side of the river of Ascension Parish. Can't look past. Rohan Davey, former LSU quarterback, played in the NFL as a coach at Ascension Christian. He's got a good squad. They're building their program. They're 2-3 on the season. Got a big victory this past week over Homa Christian. But Ascension Catholic has to stay focused. They got over the hump by beating Episcopal 14-7. Chad Elsey continues to lead the way. Him and Camille LaBeouf hooked up on a 33-yard pass in the third quarter that set up the go-ahead touchdown, and Elsey's the real deal. Like you said, Ascension Catholic sits at number one in the D4 Select with district play starting this week. So stay focused. Congrats to Donaldsonville. They face a huge test this week in Brule. Brule's got a better football team than they have in the past. They're very big on both sides of the ball. But Donald Brown and Quentin Dabney are a really good combination, throwing the ball and catching the ball. Donald being the quarterback for Donaldsonville. Coach Lee's got his squad playing well.
He is Troy LaBeouf, our correspondent for the Bayou Region and the River Parishes. Troy, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week, my friend.
Yeah, I look forward to great weather. Go check out a football game this week, folks. It's going to be beautiful weather on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
That's the beautiful thing about this front that's blowing through. We've been clamoring for cooler weather, breezier conditions, drier air. We're finally getting it. So if you don't get out to a game this Friday, you may want to get checked, because you might be nuts to miss out on this opportunity for great football in great football weather. Troy, again, we appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week.
All right, look forward to it, Ian.
We'll pause for this break. When we come back, we'll continue our look around the state by going to Southwest Louisiana and Central Louisiana on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. We are back on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview, Week 6 edition. We now go to the Lake Charles area. Chasten Tavares from 92.9 The Lake joins us. Chasten, last week Barb suffered a loss against Southside. Doesn't get much easier for them in District 3-5A play. They get the Acadiana Wrecking Rams this week. For the Buccaneers, what did we learn about them in that loss to Southside, and what do they need to do to improve to come away with the win against Acadiana?
Yeah, look, that Southside team is pretty darn good under, first-year head coach, former Nacogdoches Central, former Manny coach, Jess Curtis. They're really starting to get back to, or they're starting to, that's a program on the up. But look, it was a little bit of kind of what we've kind of seen from Barb outside of really 1 week. Defensively, they've got to find a way to find stops, and they haven't been able to do that. They're giving up 156 points in the year. That's almost 32 points a game. That's just not sustainable, especially when you look at your offense. It's scoring, just under 30 points a game. They've got to figure it out, but it's going to be tricky this week.
Sam Houston, meanwhile, faces that same Southside Sharks squad that beat Barb last week. For Sam Houston, this is a team that's had its moments this season. What do they need to do to keep rolling?
Look, offensively, I think Sam Houston is a little bit better than Barb. They're averaging just over 40-some-odd points a game. But they're kind of in that same predicament defensively. Is they've got to also find stops. Giving up 34 last week to a Lafayette squad who, again, is on the up. It feels like all these teams in that 3-5A district kind of on the up. They're also giving up nearly 30 points a game. So it's going to be a big test. I think we'll really get to see just where Sam Houston is at this week.
Sulphur gets New Iberia. The Yellow Jackets have been struggling this year. Sulphur, they've not been doing too great either, but this is a winnable game based on what we've seen from New Iberia so far. A very winnable game for Sulphur.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think if you're Sulphur, this has got to be a game that you're feeling pretty good about, especially coming off that tough Acadiana game. You're coming off three losses in a row after the 2-0 start. I think if you're Coach Gehringer, this is it's tough to say must win, but I think it's almost there.
Moving on to 3-4A, DeRidder gets Eunice this week. Eunice hasn't been all that great this year. Does DeRidder take advantage of that slow start by the Bobcats and pull off a win?
Yeah, look, this is a big rebound game for DeRidder. They're coming off now back-to-back losses. They lost to Westlake in a thrilling game. And then last week, I mean, it was 14-14 with Jennings, and then all of a sudden it was 42-21. Jennings ran away with it. So this is a massive game for DeRidder, and it couldn't come at a better time. They need this game versus Eunice. Eunice has been playing better, but it's a big game for the Dragons.
Speaking of Jennings, they get Lake Charles College Prep this week. What can we expect from that game?
Yeah, look, Jennings, I mean, since dropping the week one game to Iowa, where I got to watch that, it was, you know, just very uncharacteristic mistakes and so on. Rijon Zeno has been on a tear. He's got over 100 yards in every single game this year. He's got, you know, 7 touchdowns. It's going to come down to, can Lake Charles College Prep stop Rijon Zeno? They've certainly got the athletes to be able to spread it around this prep, but, you know, do they have the ability to slow down that running game? If not, it could be a long night for the Trailblazers.
Speaking of Leesville, they get Iowa this week. This will be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, that's it. Look, that's actually our game of the week this week is going to be Leesville-Iowa. It is going to be a ton of fun. Xavier Ford, 7 touchdowns last week, which is pretty ridiculous. He's got over 1,400 yards on the year, you know, 24 touchdowns. The dude might be one of the best, if not the best, running back in the entire state. This will be my second chance to get to see both of these teams. I get to see both of them in week one. Iowa, you look, they can spread it around with Reed Dupre and, you know, Javian Adams, Jonathan Walker. They do a lot of it on the ground. Dupre's also been doing it through the air a good bit as well. So this is going to be a ton of fun. Again, it's going to come down to, can Iowa slow down the running attack from Xavier Ford? Should be a ton of fun.
In an all-Lake Charles area matchup, or I should say all Calcasieu matchups, St. Louis takes on Westlake.
Yeah, this is going to be this one could be a long night for St. Louis. Westlake coming off their first loss of the year. They lost last week to Erath as they dropped their first one. I imagine Westlake, they get some sweet revenge this week.
Another district game, this one pitting Washington Marion against LaGrange.
Yeah, look, LaGrange they have really been a surprise. I mean, I think they're sitting, you know, they've got a couple of wins. They're sitting pretty high and mighty. I think they're 4-1, you know, on the year. They are looking pretty good. Washington Marion, they're still a little bit down. But Washington Marion, you could start to see the tide turning a little bit over there.
And with that tie turning, does that give them an opportunity to make a run through district and qualify for the playoffs?
No, it absolutely does. But it's going to come down to because now Iowa gets into that district. Leesville's also in that district. You know, Eunice is down this year, so that one won't be as big of a task. But it's going to come down to, I think, them, Leesville and Iowa. And that's why the Leesville-Iowa game is so big tonight, or coming up this week.
Other games of note this week, Kinder gets South Beauregard and Lake Arthur at Notre Dame. Chasten, any other games that we may have missed?
Yeah, you just mentioned it. South Bow Kinder, that game on Thursday night, that one's going to be a ton of fun. That was one we pondered doing as a Thursday night contest. Kinder coming off a big win last week, going on the road to 1A powerhouse Logansport, getting the win there in Logansport. Big game for them. South Beauregard, they've kind of hit a little tough stretch, but after their incredible start. So, look, this is going to be a ton of fun. This game could get over quick. They both teams run the football a whole lot. Grand Lake and Hamilton Christian, that's also a fun game. We talked about Southside Sam Houston. Lake Arthur Notre Dame, I'll be curious to see. You know, the Tigers are on a good little run here. After we had them a couple of weeks ago, I'll be real curious just to kind of scoreboard watch that game between them and Notre Dame.
He is Chasten Tavares from 92.9 The Lake in Lake Charles, giving us the insight on Southwest Louisiana football as we go into the second half of the high school football season. Chasten, as always, we appreciate the time. Best of luck this week.
Yep, thank you, brother.
From Lake Charles, we go to Central Louisiana, the Alexandria area. Lamar Gafford with SinLawPreps.com joining us. And Lamar, let's take a look at District 2-5A. Alexandria right now in first place, 5-0 record, along with Neville. Their first district game this week comes against West Monroe. Alexandria, they're off a huge win over Manny, 69-7. They won a close one to Opelousas, then get a blowout to boost their confidence heading into league play. What do they have to do to keep that role going against a tough West Monroe squad?
Yeah, just continue to play as well as they have been playing so far this season. I felt like that the game against Manny that they had there, that was kind of a statement game for them. I felt like that, you know, they had to basically come away, put away a lesser opponent here pretty early, and they definitely did that. I think that's from what I heard. You know, starting off in the first quarter, I mean, they got up to like a 42-0 lead and pretty much, you know, called the dogs off after that point there. So, look like they're firing on all cylinders. And, of course, now you get to district play, tough 2-5A district. And shoot, it all begins now with West Monroe. And I think that's going to be a pretty solid game right there for them. If they just continue to go with the running game, lean on JT Lindsey and also Darius Washington in the passing game, I mean, I think all bets are off pretty much right now for this Ash team here coming up.
Staying in that district, Pineville also opening their league schedule, taking on Neville. This is a Pineville team that's been up and down. They lost to New Iberia. They beat Avoyelles and Tioga, lose to Leesville, then beat Red River. Now they're playing an undefeated Neville squad to open up the district schedule. Does Pineville have a shot here against Neville? And for that matter, do they have a chance of winning any of their first two games, considering they get Neville and Alexandria to open the schedule?
Oh, man. And that's a tough, tough, tough task right there. And I think it's going to be very tough here for Pineville. I do like some things here for them, though. I mean, and they've kind of impressed me as far as, like, starting to play a little bit more up-tempo. They have a good running game, but they are now playing more up-tempo, and that was one thing that that was a point of emphasis that they wanted to have this year. So they could probably be a little bit better conditioned while facing against those teams like Neville, like Ash, like, you know, West Monroe, Ruston, all those different ones. It's going to be a tall task, I think, for them in that district, unfortunately, because sadly, somebody's going to have to probably be the tough one. Sadly, somebody's going to have to be that team that everybody else is probably gaining up on them. But I think they're going to gain some invaluable experience based off of that. And I think it's going to help them also out when it might come down to playoff time, because I felt like they probably needed to win three games anyway for them to have a shot of making it to the playoffs just because their district is so tough. So I think they're going to be all right.
Yeah, it is a tough district indeed, but power points will certainly help win or lose considering who they're playing in that district. In District 2, 4A, Grant opens their league schedule. They'll take on Peabody this week. And these are two teams that have been, I don't want to say mediocre because that's not giving them enough justice. You look at their schedules and who they've played. These are two teams that have risen to the challenge so far. Peabody, they're on two straight wins, beating Franklin and Washington Marion after dropping games to LaGrange, Northwood, and Fountainblue. Grant, they beat Montgomery, they beat Vidalia, they beat Bolton Academy, loss of Darman Woods, and to Buckeye. So these are two teams we still don't know a lot about. Who do you see coming out ahead in this game?
I feel like Peabody gets this one. I got a chance to see them on Saturday when they played against Washington Marion. And even though Washington Marion started off the game with a touchdown, I think Peabody cruised the rest of the way forward and had control of the ball game. As long as they have, you know, of course, T.J. Hullaby, who scored two more touchdowns today. And, I mean, shoot, looks like this season he's been the guy that they've been looking towards for Peabody this year. I mean, with about 15 touchdowns for this season for them. And he's just been on a tear so far this year. I think that they'll be all right. I think for Peabody, the good thing is now they're going to get a chance to actually play games, if not at home, but close to home. And that's going to help out their fans and everything, because their first four games, they all had to pretty much log in about 1,500 miles. And I think they were kind of weary when it came down to it and everything. So now getting to back into a familiar routine, I think that's going to help them out and everything else like that. So I got the horses in this one.
Tioga, meanwhile, takes on Wasserman. Both teams 2-3 entering this game. This may be the most evenly matched game that we see on any schedule this week.
Absolutely, too. And I feel like I still probably have Wasserman in this one, but I would not be surprised if Tioga pulls it out and goes up there to Monroe. And it seems like Tioga has gotten everything back together here over these last couple of weeks, beating Richwood and beating Gina. And not as a lot of people saw them score 60 points against Gina. And that I felt like that impressed me, too. And I think that was a get-right game for them where everything went right for them. And so right now they're pretty much on a high. I mean, they're averaging about over these last two games, they're averaging about over 50 points a game, I think, in both of those games. So I think right now, I mean, if you want to pick Tioga in this one, I feel like that's going to be pretty solid. I feel like Bosman wins it, but shoot, I wouldn't be surprised if Tioga gets it here.
Jumping to District 2-3A, Bunky, they're undefeated. They open district play against an 0-5 Caldwell Parish team. That's a game that they should win and win easily. Buckeye gets Vidalia in a game that should be relatively evenly matched. And Gina, they're 3-2. They started the season with back-to-back wins over Mangum and Menard. They lost to St. Fred's, beat Winfield, and then lost to Tioga last week, 65-26. They get a 3-2 Marksville team this week to open. Does Gina get back on the horse here, and does Gina have a chance of making a run through district, considering what we've seen so far from this district? Vidalia's not going to be a pushover. Marksville's not going to be a pushover. Is this district going to be as easy of a path as it's been the last couple years for this Gina squad?
No, I don't think so at all, because I think it's going to be very competitive, and you know it starts off with Marksville. I think Gina probably still wins. I think Gina is probably going to win this one, but I still think it's going to be very, very close when it comes down to it. I got a chance to see Marksville last week when they played against Oakdale, and I was really, really impressed by their three guys that they had in Devin Lavallee, Kyrian Prier, and Elijah Murray. And the thing is, when all three of those guys are healthy, it's like a machine that's unstoppable pretty much, because all three of those guys, they bring a little something different to the table. Lavallee, he's starting to really grow as a passer and as a quarterback, and also as a decision maker, you know, as a sophomore and everything. Murray, he brings a little bit with the speed game that he has as well. And then Prier, he kind of has a little bit of where he kind of brings a little bit of power into the game and all that stuff, where he kind of also has a little bit of speed as well. And I think when all three of those guys are rolling, they're tough to really stop. I think the winner of this game is probably going to finish second place to Bunky, and that might be an interesting matchup just to get a chance to see these two right here, because what a treat to start off district play, basically.
Yes, indeed. And lest we forget, Avoyelles also starting district play this week. They play Port Barry. Avoyelles 2-3. Port Barry out of St. Landry Parish, they are 1-4. Lamar Gafford, he is with SinlawPreps.com, also an educator himself, and we thank you for your service to educating the students of Louisiana, sir. We appreciate the time, and we'll see you next week.
I appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
And we'll be back with more of the Pelican State Prep Football Preview after this. We'll wrap up the Week 6 edition on the flip side of the break. We're back on the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Before we go, we want to highlight an act of kindness performed by two of Louisiana's high school football teams. Before their game last week, both Acadiana and Sulphur collected three truckloads of disaster relief supplies to assist North Carolina and Tennessee residents impacted by Hurricane Helene. Among those supplies, bottled water, baby diapers, paper towels and other cleaning products, and toiletries. Both schools and their communities are all too familiar with the wrath of hurricanes. Just 4 years ago, Hurricane Laura caused significant damage in Sulphur, displacing residents for several months. 1 month after that, Hurricane Delta caused major damage in the Scott and Lafayette areas, impacting families tied to Acadiana High. Those school students and their families now paying forward the generosity shown to them in the summer and fall of 2020. We also want to note a passing. Former Haughton High School head coach Will Marston died Monday morning. Marston was the defensive coordinator for Haughton's 1977 Class 3A state championship team. After taking over as head coach in 1984, he won 101 games and led Haughton to four district championships and 10 playoff appearances, including a trip to the 1990 state semifinals. On top of that, Marston started Haughton's baseball team, leading the Bucks to the 1981 state championship game. Our condolences go out to Coach Marston's family and the Haughton High School community. This week, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup will go to the North Shore for the first time this season. Coach Lou Valden, Alan Waddell, and I will be live at Mandeville High School as the Skippers take on the Covington Lions. It's a battle of the unbeatens. All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Player of the Month, Nate Shepard, and his teammates will defend their home turf against a Covington squad that's shut out its last two opponents. We'll be live from 7 to 10:30 Friday night on WWL AM 870, FM 105.3, WWL.com, and the Odyssey app. That does it for this week's edition of the Pelican State Prep Football Preview. Thanks to all of our correspondents, Coach Lou Vowden, Robin Fambro, Gene Ponte, Tim Fletcher, Kevin Foote, Troy LaBeouf, Chasten Tavares, and Lamar Gafford. And special thanks to this week's guest, Lakeshore head coach Brent Indest, for taking time out of his schedule to join us. I'm Ian Ozan. Join us again next week for the Pelican State Prep Football Preview.